This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, as everybody is aware, we're living in a very dangerous world at the moment, and a world that may become even more dangerous if Donald Trump is elected President of the United States in November. And one of his recent statements had a particular resonance for us in Europe. He said of NATO that if they didn't pay their 2% of GDP, if they were laggards in any way, Putin could do what the hell he wants with Europe. And that is a statement that is loaded and requires a response. And there has been a response. And we're joined now from Brussels by Suzanne Lynch. Suzanne is associate editor at Politico. She was formerly, many Irish people will know, the US correspondent, Washington correspondent for the Irish Times. Suzanne, thank you very much for joining us. Trump's statement about his contempt for NATO, really, and indeed about his statement that Putin could do whatever the hell he wanted, and we know he is an admirer of Putin's, it has implications for Europe that are quite serious. And I note a speech by Thierry Breton, the European Commissioner for Internal Markets, who's a French politician, which calls on Europe and the EU specifically to get its house in order in terms of defense. How significant was that speech by Breton, and what tremors, if any, did the Trump outburst cause?
Good to be with you, Eamon. Yes, I mean, both those things I'd agree with completely. Breton, he's a French commissioner and has been making a lot of noise, really. He's quite a vocal commissioner anyway here. He's always out in the media, always doing interviews. And he strongly believes that Europe needs to increase its defense capabilities. Now, some people might say one of the reasons he wants to do that is that France happens to be one of the big EU defense countries. It's got a big defense industry. So, of course, they're going to want that, to do that. But no, I think he reflects a changing focus here in Brussels, and that is on defense. And actually, just thinking here, I mean, one of the most significant things actually was when von der Leyen in the last few weeks or so announced, we all knew it was going to happen, that she was going to run again for commission president.
Yes.
She talked about defense quite a lot there. She talked about this need for a change in mindset in the EU when it comes to defense. It really was one of her key themes as she tries to run for another 5-year term. Now, we still have, 10 months or so left, or a little less maybe, of the current commission. But, the beginning of next year, we'll be into a new 5-year phase. And it's undoubtedly going to be a key focus. On the Trump comments, this certainly did cause a lot of consternation. In one sense, as we all know as well, it's easy to get immune to Donald Trump's comments. But this particular comment, where he seemed to encourage Putin to essentially attack a NATO member, really worried people here I mean, I think the message has got through for a while from Trump, and not just Trump, but other US presidents like Obama, who long said, look, Europe, the other members of NATO are not paying enough. And that was technically true if you look at the figures. You know, not to use the Trump phrase, freeloading, but America was paying its share and a lot of the EU countries were not. But that has already changed. You know, I think the war in Ukraine has already changed perspectives. The countries now, like Germany being the biggest example, have completely changed their approach now to spending. They want to spend money on defense. They didn't really want to before. But undoubtedly, that prospect of a Trump return in November's election is definitely shaping all the discussion here in Brussels.
Yes, and I mean, under Angela Merkel, who was running Germany when Donald Trump was last in office, even under Angela Merkel, Germany, which is the wealthiest country in Europe, wasn't paying its 2% of GDP and was nowhere near it. So, as you say, Americans have a point. And there's also a trend now obvious towards isolationism in America. So the question arises, and I'm sure this is what Commissioner Breton was getting at. The question arises, who defends Europe? And how is Europe defended? Once that discussion takes place, where is Ireland, Suzanne, with our neutrality, which we cling to relentlessly, and many people in this country support? How does that fit?
Yeah. I mean, I think politically, this is very difficult territory for Ireland. Whether, I mean, officials will say, EU officials in Dublin will point out that we've got protections, you know, the EU treaty is there, but the wind is blowing in a certain way. And whether, you know, we like it or not, or agree or not, most countries in Europe don't share our view. They want more spending on defence. They think this is a good thing. And the number of neutral countries, military neutral countries, used to be 6 out of the EU, which is still not very many, 27. But that's now gone down to 4 since Finland and Sweden decided to join NATO, which, by the way, was a huge change. You know, nobody would have thought of that a few years ago. So we're a dwindling number. Now, Austria is one of the other countries, which is an important country. Obviously, Austria, Malta and Cyprus are the other three. But it's harder to make your arguments. Now, in saying that, a few things have happened actually in the last few days and weeks. Early days enough, but one issue I think that's a concern for Ireland is that the Financial Times reported last week that officials and lawyers in the European Commission are looking at ways to around a prohibition in the EU treaty from directly funding defence from the EU budget.
Yes.
So that's alarm bells there for Ireland completely. Now, that is all very preliminary, it sounds like. So that's number one thing. And I think we're at a very, very early stage of that. It's Article 41.2 of the treaty or something says that the budget cannot have military or defence implications. But what the Financial Times is saying, you know, perhaps maybe that could be used to fund Ukraine or help Ukraine, not within the EU, for example. So that's one thing. The other thing, and they were discussing this at their EU summit last week, Varadkar's last summit, how to finance this. That's what they're talking about. And that's what Breton is talking about. He's a he talks about internal markets and that kind of. So it's all very technical. But another worrying one for Ireland is that one suggestion that was put forward was that the European Investment Bank, which is like the EU's bank based in Luxembourg, a lot of countries, actually 14 countries, including the big ones, Germany, France and Italy, have called for the rules to be changed or, I don't know, interpreted that the EIB, the European Investment Bank, could lend to the defence sector. At the moment, they don't really lend to defence. Now, Ireland would be a shareholder of that bank through the Ministry of Finance with all the other countries. So I'm sure, I don't know, but Ireland will probably oppose that. Now, unless there be a way that Ireland, which they've done a lot over the years, can say, look, other people can do that. We're just not going to. You know, we're not going to stop other people. We're not going to do that. The other proposal, none of these, they're also complicated. There was no real agreement. But the other proposal was that you would issue joint debt, joint borrowing, a bit like COVID, you know, the idea of a euro bond to fund defence. Now, the good news for Ireland, if opposed to that, which I presume it is that other countries like Germany and the Netherlands are opposed to that, but for a different reason. Because they don't like the idea of common issuance of debt in Europe. This all goes back to the euro crisis, where they're like, we shouldn't be bailing out the poorer countries. They don't like the idea that European debt is characterized as one composite whole. They've got their own credit ratings, etc. So that, but all these ideas, and by the way, you mentioned Breton, you're absolutely right. Breton and Macron then picked it up at the summit, are one of the strongest figures in this. France is very, very strong on this. You know, Macron has been talking about this for a long time. So they're kind of proposing all these ideas, really. They're one of the biggest countries. This conversation is only getting started now, but it's going to continue and it's going to be a big theme.
Yes, and the other thing about French is that they are a nuclear power. And before the United Kingdom left through Brexit, they were also a nuclear power. The departure of the UK, in terms of sheer deterrent power, was significant in that respect, or is becoming significant, with Russia increasingly belligerent. And as we saw at the weekend with that missile that flew across Poland, whether accidentally or whether Putin was testing the response. The European Union, in this world we're now living in, which is a rapidly changing geopolitical situation, China, Taiwan, Russia, Ukraine, and of course, Israel and the Gaza Strip. These are dangerous times, and they don't look like they're going to get any less dangerous, particularly with the Trump presidency.
They certainly are, and you're absolutely right about France. And France is the only European country then that's a permanent member of the Security Council. So you're absolutely right. It matters what France thinks. Because as we know, and we've spoken about before, Germany for decades, really, for obvious historical reasons, did not want to get involved in war or take the lead in EU defence. So they were happy to leave that to France or Britain. And as we saw, the war in Ukraine and the energy dependence that showed up did prompt a complete rethink in Germany. But still, France are very important in this debate. But you're absolutely right about the changing times we're in. That missile that came into Polish airspace, it came in about 4 a.m. on Sunday morning. And the Polish defense minister, you know, spoke about this and said that they scrambled, in response to the way he put it, Polish and NATO F-16s were deployed or were used in response in some way. Now, he made the point that it was only 39 seconds and said something like, we would have been able to aim at these if we thought they were attacking a Polish target.
Yes.
But you're absolutely right that, and remember back in 2022, there was a similar issue and two people were killed in Poland, but then that was linked to actually a Ukrainian. It wasn't the fault of Russia, it turned out with that. But it shows, A, how volatile that region is. And this is the problem for these Eastern European countries. They're right there at the edge. And over the last few weeks, Russia, now particularly over the weekend, has been increasing its assaults on Kyiv, but also over in Lviv in the west, which is generally considered safer or has been safer.
Yes.
And obviously, the closer they go there, the closer they are to NATO and EU members. So, I mean, we had like the Lithuanian prime minister and others saying in the last while, you know, we need to be, they talked about conscription. They did an interview over the weekend. Even
yes.
These, you know, Latvia and Lithuania said we need to be prepared that if something happens, that we're ready to deter Russia.
Well, they've had experience of communism in our lifetime, in the lifetime of people there. I was in Poland a number of times playing football when Poland was a communist country, effectively ruled from Moscow, and it wasn't fun. So those people who have experienced, you know, Soviet Russian communism will worry about what Trump said and how Putin is behaving. And the reason it has a real relevance here is our own position, which is neutrality. And the European Union, if it galvanizes itself, it appears to have intellectually, Suzanne, decided. Even Scholz, the German Chancellor, is a lot more hawkish now in some of his commentary.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you take von der Leyen, so it's 5 years now since she didn't run the last time, she was kind of parachuted in, but since she became European Commission President, almost 5 years. And she said herself, when she announced she was running, things have changed dramatically. Like I was talking about Brexit, this was pre-Ukraine war, pre-COVID, but particularly on defence, nobody was talking about this. And I found from, I was covering, you know, 10 years ago, I was here for the Irish Times in Brussels. And I find that with the EU, something becomes the main issue for about 2 or 3 years. The story changes here. So when I was here 10 years ago, it was all about the financial crisis. And then it became about migration in 2015 and 16. And I can remember myself and all these other journalists barely knew what Schengen was. We were trying to work out how does this work. And nobody had been talking about that before. And this is what's happened now with defence. All of a sudden, with the war in Ukraine, it became, right, what are the, what can the EU do in terms of defence? What are the rules? And this has become the dominant story now. So she's right in that sense that things have changed. Also, another issue that is interesting for Ireland is that she has suggested that she thinks in the next European Commission, there should be a defence commissioner.
Yes.
Now, that would be obviously something that would sit uncomfortably with Ireland, though I think I'm right in saying that the government, the Taoiseach, kind of said, you know, that, well, really, they've no power really to block that. But, you know, let's see, let depends what it does. And I was speaking to someone else who said, look, it might be just a name only because when it comes to it, they wouldn't have that much power because member states still have power, etc. But, you know, if you were to have an EU defence commissioner, that would be a big statement. You know,
right.
The idea, you know. And the other thing, I think I mentioned this before, which I think is so fascinating. You see, for years, a lot of countries, even the ones who were spending a lot on defence, they didn't really, the East Europeans and Britain, this is the same for Britain, they didn't like the idea of the EU increasing its defence capabilities because they felt that was a job of NATO. And they felt that that might cut across NATO and too many people involved and we don't think that's the job of the EU. But now that's changed. And now they're so desperate, particularly in the East European part of the continent, as you explained there, they are so worried about what might happen that they've changed out and they're really up for investing in defence within the EU as well as NATO.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, the European elections, 6th of June to the 9th of June, there has been a swing to the right everywhere, really, Suzanne. Mm. This clearly won't be, this is only my guess, but this may not be the issue that people vote on. Although some, as you point out, in Eastern Europe in particular, it's on their mind. What will the big issues be, do you think? Because this is a very important election, isn't it?
With it is.
The rightward shift with the Hungarian semi-detached, the Hungarian semi-detached under Viktor Orban. Mm. It's a big, big election, isn't it?
It is. They're happening in June over about 4 days. And you're right in the sense that even though on one hand I'm saying or we're talking here about what a huge issue this is for people in East Europe, I think in all elections, like American elections, people don't vote on foreign policy.
No.
They vote on, you know, they vote on different issues. I think a big issue for Europe would be migration.
Yes.
And immigration. I think this whole farming vote has become very interesting. Those farmer protests have really made an impact. There've been protests here in Brussels, in France, in Italy, all around the place, in Poland.
In Ireland.
In Ireland.
Yes.
So I think this idea, and you know, it was interesting listening to Simon Harris's speech, because I Fine Gael, his party is part of the EPP, that's the political group von der Leyen is with. And I just said to myself, it's exactly what other countries are saying. He talked about migration. He talked about the farming vote. He talked about law and order. And he talked about fighting populism. And honestly, you could take those four things. And that is actually what I think the European election is going to be about. So in a way, all countries, the more centrist governments, that's what they're trying to defend, if you like, or trying to show that they're responding now in a way. He put it firm but fair on migration. But that's kind of, I think, what a lot of countries are thinking. But I do think the challenge for the European Union is that in these elections, there'll be more than 700 MEPs chosen. There's always been a contradiction that people tend to send people to Europe that they wouldn't vote for in their own domestic election.
Yes, it's a resting home,
yeah.
A nursing home for politicians who have failed. Certainly in Ireland, it has been that way, hasn't it?
Mm. And you've seen people like Marine Le Pen, the French populist leader.
Yes.
You've seen Nigel Farage making his, you know, that's made his career being a member of the European Parliament. So people are worried. There was a poll out from the European Council on Foreign Relations just at the end of January there. And that was the first big polling that was done. And they predict a major shift to the right. And they see that populist radical right parties that they say are going to gain votes. And then the centre left and green parties and those parties are going to lose ground. Now, what that means, it gets kind of complicated, but it's more that in the parliament, then if it shifts to the right slightly, what happens is that these kind of different parties start aligning with each other. They might not have a majority, but it's just that the EPP, which are kind of the relatively centre of the road, middle ground, political group, which is the largest. If the people on the left of them have gone down in numbers, they mightn't have the numbers to caucus with those on big votes, and they might be more inclined to do a deal with the far right. So it could subtly shape things. Like, I think with the climate and Green New Deal and all that, we've seen von der Leyen already change her mind on that, or under pressure really, because she is a German politician from her own country. German businesses, not just German farmers, but German businesses saying these climate regulations are too onerous. So I think it would have a huge impact, and it'll embolden people like Viktor Orban. Like, you could have, you know, his party, Fidesz, Meloni's party, the Polish party, Law and Justice, who were kicked out in the last election, but they're still going to have MEPs. They mightn't be in government, but they will. So look, Eamon, you're absolutely right. It's a key moment. And a lot of these parties and on the right are very pro-defence. So again, that's not great maybe for Ireland if they're talking about, you know, putting more money into defence, say, rather than climate change, for example.
Now, in many instances, Susanna, as far as I'm aware, unanimity is required, isn't it, to pass
it is,
laws.
Yeah.
Again, if these elections produce a kind of very diverse and fractured small groups having undue influence, unanimity on any major issue will be very hard to get. And the other thing I'd like to ask you about is von der Leyen herself, whether she is secure as she seeks a second term.
Yeah. So you're right. So this unanimity, the phrases they use here are unanimity and qualified majority voting.
Yes.
And that is not a majority. It's this complicated equation where you need to have a certain number of countries, a certain population. So most laws actually at this stage, I wouldn't say most, but a lot of them are done through qualified majority because, or else, you know, everybody had blocked something. But the most sensitive issues need unanimous agreement by all member states. So that includes foreign and defence policy. It includes EU membership, deciding if a country joins the EU. It's crucially for Ireland, it is to do with taxation and harmonisation of taxation. So there's a few of them, very important ones, really. that you need unanimous agreement. Now, what's interesting for Ireland here is that in the last few months, with this whole debate, which we've spoken about before, about will Ukraine join the EU and should the EU become larger, the Commission and big countries like France and Germany have said, listen, before we do that, we need to reform our own EU, our own shop. Yes. And one of the suggestions is that you remove this unanimity rule, particularly for defence and foreign policy, because frankly, everyone got sick of Hungary blocking everything just for the sake of it. So now there's a chicken and egg situation, because now there are ways around this, but really, in order to get rid of the unanimity rule, you need unanimity. Or, you know, you're getting into the idea of changing the EU treaties, which would open up a referendum in Ireland, for example, maybe in other countries, which no one wants. So it's, and I'm sure Ireland, for its other reasons, well, defence as well, but obviously with tax, it's not going to want to, see that. But there is that pressure now on smaller countries, because Hungary, after all, is a relatively small country, who are guarding their unanimity prerogatives to change that. But as I say, legally, it'll be quite hard to do that, but that is definitely going to be a debate.
Will von der Leyen face a serious challenge as she seeks re-election?
It's a good question. I hate making predictions, but I have to say, I think she will be reappointed. But, it's not a done deal. What she will have to do is appear before the Parliament, and they have to approve her. And generally, every 5 years when these elections happen, there's a scalp. The European Parliament does take a scalp at one of the commissioners and says, no, we're not happy. You need to send somebody else. So I think what's interesting, the politics of this is interesting. I think she'll be okay, but I think she's going to have to say things to the Parliament and do things that are going to make them happy. So exactly what we're talking about. Say, I won't be as green in the next commission. I listening to your voters and your farmers that they've had enough on Green Deal. Or she'll say, I do agree that we have to put all our money into defence because that's what you want. So in other words, this is why it links back to the shape of the next European Parliament will have an indirect effect on how von der Leyen does her job, because she's going to have to listen to them. So if it's a more right-wing parliament, that will affect policy.
Yeah, just a final question on that, Suzanne. Is your feeling that the changes reflected nationally around Europe, which are generally shifts towards the right, even the United States, a dramatic shift towards populism, right-wing populism, is this the thing to watch for when we see the results come in June?
Definitely, I think so. I think that is definitely to watch for. And then also, I mean, one of the problems is drawing comparisons across very different countries. So green parties, for example, are different in each country. But I'd look at how they're affected, because this farmer revolt, even Hungary, which never really got that involved in farming and agricultural issue, is now coming out in solidarity with the farmers. Orban has seized on this. So I think the backlash against the green policies and that kind of thing could be one of the things that manifests itself in the election, either towards a more far-right vote or a drubbing for traditional green parties.
Yeah, because reconciling the farmers' demands with the green imperative is extremely difficult.
Yes, exactly.
And there's 27 nations at the table. Thank you very much, Suzanne. We're really grateful to you for joining us. Suzanne Lynch is an associate editor with Politico, very experienced journalist who was once upon a time a Washington correspondent for the Irish Times. We're grateful to Suzanne, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.